member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chicks in the BC. It is Saturday, the 28th of June, Anno Domini 2014, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, it's still 0-0 between Brazil and Chile, and Brazil already has two fouls. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. That's the end of the soccer news. as you may know, this week was Google I.O., which is where they show off all their cool new stuff. We were expecting an Android news heavy show at this year's Google I.O., and boy, did we get one. There's no way we can talk about everything Google introduced. The show is only 2 hours. But here's a taste. More than anything else, Tuesday's keynote demonstrated Google's ambition to take its mobile OS basically everywhere. To your car, to your body, to your television, to your laptop, even into your workplace. We saw a preview of Android's L release with a new design. Google calls it Material Design, that adds some depth, feature support for 64-bit, and an enhanced notification system. The keynote also emphasized Android becoming contextually aware, flowing from place to place with you and taking advantage of any input you throw at it, be it your voice aimed at a device on your wrist, a button on your steering wheel, your mouse on your laptop, a gaming control on your TV. This is about Google everywhere. On the mobile web, Google's also bringing in new design elements to mobile Chrome. Search results in Chrome will feature cards to take advantage of Material Design, for example. It features fast, fluid animations at 60 frames per second. Scrolling through images in a Google search, for example, looks like actually flipping through an image book. Chrome also gets a multitasking upgrade. Android Wear will support various screen configurations, circular or square, for example. It understands your voice so you can interact with it. An LG Watch has an always-on display that supports notifications via vibrations. The touchscreen display lets you swipe vertically across it to see notifications from various apps. Swiping horizontally lets you see them. You can also swipe them to dismiss or hold them to scroll across different ones. Google is coming to your car, too. Google announced Android Auto, a way to use connected Android apps and services in the car. Navigation, communication, and music will take center stage here. Oh, hey, and Google is also coming to your TV with Android TV. And, of course, it's all driven by search. You can say Breaking Bad, and it shows you that show on every service you have installed. But it isn't all Android, at least not entirely. Chromebooks. It began with one reference device. Today there are 8 OEMs making 15 devices with, and I quote, many more on the way. Its keys are speed, simplicity, and security. All, listen to this, all of the top 10 highest rated laptops on Amazon are Chromebooks. Let me repeat that. All of the top 10 highest rated laptops on Amazon are Chromebooks. Short take, it's a success. Plenty more to talk about, like Google Fit and Quests and Game Profiles and App Purify, a free service to test your apps, and a lot more. Lots of places on the web to learn about them all. We just don't have time. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google I.O. And your choices are amazing stuff. Pretty cool. Meh. And can't wait till Apple invents these. And so far, the number one choice is can't wait till Apple invents these. Followed far behind by meh. Then pretty cool and only 2 votes for amazing stuff. Anyway, please vote at soundbites.org. And when you're done with that, I know you have a lot more to say. So scroll down on the right until you see fascinating stuff. Under that, you'll see the forums. Click on that, and it will take you to the forum page. The second forum on the list is the poll discussion, and the top item on the poll discussion is 28 June 14, Google I.O. I'll tell you, it was kind of amazing. Google has gotten serious about this stuff. I mean, they've always been, you know, dabbling in it and just putting... Google's always been a company that says, here's something cool. Let's see what people go make of this. And now they're saying, this is not just cool. We're aggressively going to make sure that this stuff gets out there. So I'm looking forward to all the stuff at Google I.O. We've got a couple of other things about it, but not everything is about Google. But there are a couple of cool things like Cardboard and Aura that we'll talk about later. But in the moment, we'll go to the phones. Our first caller is Carl from Pottstown, PA. Welcome, Carl. What's up?
Hi, how you doing this morning?
Peachy, how are you?
Okay. I have a question about listening to streaming internet audio in the car. My car is just equipped with a standard AM/FM radio with a CD player, and it does have an auxiliary analog audio input jack, and that's it. If I wanted to be able to listen to streaming internet audio in my car as I drive, what would I need to do that in my car, and is there a relatively inexpensive way to accomplish that?
No. To answer the second question, not necessarily. You need something that will... right now, the thing you are going to need is either some sort of XM radio setup or...
a smartphone.
Do it through cellular. I'm still lucky enough to have unlimited data through Verizon. So I do what you want to do all the time. I mean, I listen to streaming radio 99% of the time I'm in the car. But that means I use a lot of data every month.
How much on average have you looked?
2.5-3 gigs just from the radio, you know, because I listen every day. Well, not so much now as I am about to retire. And therefore, don't go anywhere anymore. Some days I don't put on pants. A TMI, I know. But back when I
thank you for doing that today.
Yeah, right. Yeah, really, we appreciate it.
It is radio. I didn't have to wear pants, just so you know. But when I was driving every day, it's a 20-minute drive with traffic, and I was using about 3 gigs a month. If that gives you some idea of what it would cost you to do that yourself.
And so with most cellular plans, you're looking at about $10 a gig per month. So if you don't mind...
After the first one or two or whatever.
Yeah, so if you don't mind spending that $30, $40 a month for cellular data services, in addition to anything else you may surf on that smartphone or tablet, a cellular tablet as well, anything with an audio out jack, then that's the way to do it.
The other way you could do that is with some sort of XM radio type thing, and you know what those cost. I mean, you can do the math there yourself. Look those up and see. The problem is we don't have ubiquitous Wi-Fi yet, and by ubiquitous, I mean out on the highway kind of ubiquitous, right? You can go pretty much anywhere and have it indoors or out on a patio, but to be in the middle of nowhere on your phone, if you're lucky, you get cellular, but pretty much nothing else yet. That makes sense?
Okay. Yeah, that kind of answers my question. I figured there wouldn't be anything inexpensive.
Yeah.
But I just thought I'd check and see.
What some people do...
I noticed that a friend of mine has a little track phone, and I noticed it had a headphone output jack, and he said it could access the internet, so I was wondering if it could be done through a track phone.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. If you've got one of those inexpensive plans with one of the lower-end companies, I hate to put it that way, but you know what I mean, the less well-known companies, that has unlimited data, you should be able to do that, and it might cost you less than paying for the extra gigs on Verizon. And then you buy a cheap phone that pretty much only does that, and there you go. But it's still got to be able to run the apps
right.
that do internet radio, unless the phone comes with a radio app built
right
in.
Some of them may already come with a Pandora app or a what's the other big one, Spotify app.
Spotify.
There's a dozen different internet radio streaming services, and then there's a lot of just like radio stations. Jazz 90.1 here streams its own service over the internet in an MP3 stream, and you need to have an app to run that on the phone. So typically that's why you need a smartphone that can run an app rather than just any phone. Some of the low-end phones can access web pages, but it's mobile web and very limited feature sets, and so probably not streaming audio.
And the other problem you're going to have is coverage, right? And I don't know what, you know, the second tier. I'm trying to find a
lot of
better
them are,
term.
Than, well, yeah, a lot of them use Sprinter or T-Mobile because they're less expensive, right? Because they're competing against AT&T and Verizon, the two big guys.
Right.
But their coverage isn't necessarily as good. You know, Sprint talks about how fast they are. What's interesting is you watch the commercials from all four companies, and they're all right. One of them is the fastest. One of them has the best coverage. One of them has the best consumer reports. One of them has the best whatever. But all of their claims are right because they never claim the same thing.
Yeah, and it's all different.
Yeah.
Right.
But it looks like TracFone does have a couple of smartphone options. They have a couple of Samsungs, or even an LG. So you can get a smartphone from some of the other tier companies, and just look at what their data plans are and if they still have unlimited data available.
And if they have coverage in your area.
Okay, and let me just say one more thing. Tell me if I'm making any sense here. The way I understand it, XM satellite radio or Pandora or any one of these satellite services, they wouldn't allow me to receive regular streaming audio like your stream, for example, because they only have certain stations you could select and that's it. But
correct.
If I wanted to listen to something like your stream, I would just need something that would be able to give me audio over any website that streamed audio, even if it's not one of the specific stations on XM or Pandora.
Right. It needs an MP3 streaming app.
Right.
In the browser in this case.
Right. If what you want to do is listen to a Pandora channel or an XM station, then those are fine for that. But if you want to receive anything, including us, then you need to be able to run some apps because we have an app and there's other apps that'll catch us. But
and
it's got to be an app.
Most of the browsers on the Android and iOS tablets have MP3 streaming built into the browser because it's a full-featured browser. It's not a mobile browser like on the lower-tier phones.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, well, thank you for the help. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Well, go to a store and play with the phones.
I was just about to say that. Go to a store and play with the phones.
And try opening the Jazz 90.1 website and see if you can get the audio to stream.
Yeah.
Use their cellular, not your own.
Not yours.
Yeah, let them spend the dime.
Yeah. We went to
Let us know what you found out, because actually that'll be kind of an interesting...
some feedback, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, what is it? Walmart. They've got like typically what they call burner phones, and you can get unlimited data plans and everything else. So for something like that, I think they're like what, 30, 40 bucks for a month and it's unlimited. The coverage isn't always like you were saying.
Right.
It's cheap that end, and they're offering it, but it's also hit and miss whether you're going to have it constantly wherever you go.
Right.
Especially for him down in PA,
right,
with the hills and the mountains.
Yeah.
Who knows? Well, but that goes back to what I've been talking about for a while, which is my iPod. I have an old phone that I use as my Android iPod, so I call it the iPod. But I don't do... I can only do wireless on... I can only do... Yeah, I can only do...
Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi, not cellular. And so I do a lot of... podcasts that I load up before I go out. I do, that sort of stuff. If I need to stream something, I do, like I said, still have wireless or unlimited data, thank God. But
and even an old phone with no cellular service built into it still can make 911 calls.
Right.
Because it's a mandate for emergencies.
Right. So
that's usually how the jailbreaks work is – because you have to be able to make a 911 call, there's an in to the phone, even when it's locked.
Yep. So the nice thing about that is, like I said, I can load it up with all kinds of stuff ahead of time, but unfortunately not wireless. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back. And if anybody has an answer to that, let us know. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
I want to apologize to the people trying to watch on Ustream. I'm having a little bit of trouble. I'm trying to get it back up as we speak.
Of course, they can't hear you if they're watching on...
Well, they might have turned on the audio stream, too.
The audio stream. If you've traveled and tried to get on the internet, speaking of free internet, you've probably seen some pretty suspicious-looking Wi-Fi networks. With names like free Wi-Fi and totally free internet. Those are likely access points you'd best avoid. There's a much bigger threat to your security than somebody randomly phishing for you to connect to them. The networks you've already connected to and trusted, like AT&T and Xfinity. Mobile broadband providers are eager to get you to connect to their Wi-Fi-based networks when you're away from home. AT&T has built a network of free hotspots for customers at thousands of places, including train stations, as well as Starbucks and McDonald's locations across the country. Comcast has spread Xfinity wireless network far and wide as well, turning customers' cable modems into public Wi-Fi hotspots accessible with an Xfinity account login. Those free Wi-Fi connections are popular for good reason. They help reduce the amount of broadband cellular data you consume, and they often provide better network speeds than what you can manage over a 4G connection. Well, that's not true. But they also provide a really easy way for someone to surreptitiously tap into your internet traffic and capture your account information for less than friendly purposes. Millions of AT&T and Xfinity customers could be leaving themselves exposed to surreptitious hacking of their internet traffic, exposing their personal data as a result. AT&T sets smartphones to recognize and connect to AT&T Wi-Fi hotspots automatically. That's the name of the... hotspot itself, ATT Wi-Fi, all one word, all lowercase. This can
bad
be
bad guys take note.
Yep, this can be switched off in iPhones and the latest Android devices by setting the phone to ask the user before connecting to networks when Wi-Fi is turned on, but not associated with a hotspot. To demonstrate this, you could set up your laptop as a Wi-Fi hotspot, broadcasting the network name or SSID ATT Wi-Fi after alerting your neighbors, of course. And after killing off the settings for your preferred networks on your iPhone, for example, you could turn on Wi-Fi and connect to that fake Wi-Fi hotspot without any prompting, as long as you've been connecting to an AT&T Wi-Fi hotspot before. Similarly, all Xfinity hotspots are called Xfinity Wi-Fi. And then I'm not giving away anything. Everybody can see what they're called.
Yep.
And once you're connected to one, you automatically connect to any other. That means that if someone were to set up a malicious Wi-Fi access point called Xfinity Wi-Fi, devices that have connected to Xfinity's network before could automatically connect without alerting the user or asking for the password. By the way, those Xfinity Wi-Fi login credentials, they're the same set of credentials used to gain access to Comcast customers' account billing information, webmail, and other services. So whenever you connect to anybody's free Wi-Fi, be careful. Set your phone to say, please notify me before you connect to any free Wi-Fi that doesn't require a password. And if are you careful enough, you AT&T or Comcast or Xfinity customers, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. That's an interesting problem and one that I'm very leery of. So, for example, today, my daughter is home for the summer and working at Brugger's.
Mm-hmm.
And I took her there, and it was very early. I wasn't going to come here and sit for 4 hours. So
why not?
I could have, but I did not.
We got
hours.
A real nice, comfortable couch.
They really do.
Take a nap.
But instead, I took her to work, and I had breakfast there. So I was sitting and reading my books through my Google Nexus 7,
mm-hmm.
and it wanted to make a connection to Brugger's-free-Wi-Fi. So before I connected,
mm-hmm.
I looked around to see if anybody else in the place had a laptop.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody did.
Oh, great.
And so it was. I asked the guy, I said, you got free Wi-Fi here? He said, yeah. I said, what's the name? And he didn't know. But one of the other people went and looked. And there it was, Brugger's free Wi-Fi. So I made the connection, but also my machine will always ask me from now on when it's going to make that connection. So you should do that because it really is dangerous. Somebody actually asked me if they could use VPN, and the answer to that is probably. But if anything you do is outside that VPN, including possibly, depending on who set up your VPN, making the connection to that VPN, there's an issue. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's up?
I had a semi-tragedy. I hope it's not a total tragedy. My computer that I've been using but was just about to replace with a different one just died. It shut it off one night, and the next day it wouldn't boot up. I'm hoping maybe it's just a power supply, but I've already purchased a new computer. Is it possible to just take the old hard drive out of that computer and put it into the spare bay in the new one and transfer stuff that way?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
The answer is maybe.
Yeah.
It depends on whether or not that is one of the things that died.
Yeah, if it's the hard drive and you hear, well, you could take it out of there. You could hook it up to the other machine, and I wouldn't mount it right in there. I would just hook it up because it's probably SATA, so you could have it hanging outside of the box with the power cord and the connector to the drive hooked up. And here, if you hear, listen, put your ear up to it and see if you hear a clacking sound. Because if you hear it going clack, 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 it's the heads banging. And you're not going to get it up. Or if you don't hear it spin up at all, you know that was also part of the issue.
But there was nothing at all. I mean, I press the start button, there's no hum, no lights, no nothing on the...
likely the power supply.
Yeah, it could very well be just the power supply.
In which case, hooking up the old hard drive to the new machine will boot it up. Now, what operating system did you have in it?
Well, that was going to be the thing I questioned. The new one has got Windows 8, and the old one was XP.
All right, you could load it as the second drive, not the boot drive.
Right.
So you could load it as the second drive, and honestly, your best bet is to pull off all of your data and put it on the new drive, because how old was your old machine?
2007, probably.
Okay, so it's a 7-year-old computer, which means it's a 7-year-old hard drive. Which means you're already on the downside of the actuarial curve.
20% per year is about average. 20% chance of failure per year.
And as I say that, I just resurrected a 2007 laptop myself. And stuck the latest version of Linux on it. But it's not going to be my...
Yeah, it's not your primary
machine. Yes. It's just something I'm playing with. And so if it dies, it dies. But you really have to be aware that drives get old, and they get old faster than us, and they get old faster than dogs. So 7-year-old hard drive it's time to retire it. Yeah.
One of the things you'll run into when you get that XP drive mounted as say the D drive is where is your stuff? You have to go into the documents and settings folder. Or it might be in a user folder. It depends on which service pack you might have had loaded. And then you'll be able to find your My Documents and get all your stuff back.
You'll get all your stuff back from the My Documents folder, but that's not where your mail is. If you're one of those people who downloads all your mail instead of leaving it up at the server, then it's somewhere else, and that depends, again, on what version of Windows you had, what service pack you had, and what program you used.
And if you were using Outlook, or Outlook Express, it's almost impossible to migrate that into a new Outlook or Outlook Express.
Yeah,
which doesn't come with a new machine anymore.
I'm not worried too much about the mail. I was just wondering if there's going to be a conflict between the two operating systems and
No, the second machine won't. If it doesn't boot, right?
Yeah.
Then you should be fine. And one thing I would suggest you do is wipe out the Windows directory or folder on that. Make sure you're pointing to the right drive.
The second drive. Will Windows allow you to delete itself?
No, but it will allow you to delete a folder named Windows on another drive.
Yeah. One other thing he could try, if he's venturous, I mean, you can get a power supply for, you know, like $20-25.
Yep.
And put change
right,
out the
and then you got a second machine.
Yeah, and then you got a second machine. You could
It was a laptop, right?
No, they're both PCs.
Yeah, then $20-25,
you might then wind up with two machines.
But
I was figuring, you know, I didn't know if it would be easy to do that or, you know, I'm sure doing the power supply, it might, you know, it'd be a service call. I just figured I could pop a drive and move it over to the other machine.
Yeah, if you're
comfortable. The new machine has a free bay, so.
If you're comfortable inside the computer, that's easy.
Yeah, just make sure it's turned off and plugged in.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. I had one more question, which I can't remember. I'll have to call you next week.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Mike.
Take care.
Later. I hate that, too. CRS.
Yep. Basically, playing around in the computer is not as difficult as it used to be. Because people are... the computer companies are...
I can remember going over to your place working on your computer I'm switching stuff in and out, and you're sweating.
I'm sweating. I don't do hardware. I do not do hardware.
I'm when sitting there pulling it in and out and doing this and that, and you're going, boy, it's getting hot in here.
When I was a kid, probably 7 years old, my father was working on an outlet in the kitchen.
Okay.
And it blew him across the room. He was fine afterwards, but every time I stick my hands anywhere near an electrical source now, I see that in my head. And ever since I was a kid, I mean, it was a very traumatic moment for me.
Okay,
I stuck a bobby pin into the outlet once.
That explains an awful lot.
The whole family was in the bathroom. Dad was showering. I'm sitting on the counter. I must have been 3 or 4. It's one of my earliest memories. And, a bobby pin that my mom was putting up in her hair. There's a hole in the wall. I'll see if it fits. It fit.
Yeah. Well, that just explained almost everything.
Yeah, really. I mean, whoa.
But so I don't do electricity well, and it really makes me break out in a sweat. And even watching somebody else do it, it's very much the same.
I can remember getting set back on my butt one time. This is back when I just opened up the shop, and I had an old CRT monitor, and it needed cleaning out, and because it was filthy. So I undid the screws, pulled it off, and I happened to hit one of the capacitors trying to pick out some of the dirt and all that. That set me, because the bench is here and maybe the back wall is maybe 3-4 foot away. It slammed me right up against it and said, hit the ground. It's like, whoa, okay, I won't do that again.
Well, and that's one of the dangerous things about computers. They have so many capacitors in there. Even when you unplug them,
they still hold the charge.
Exactly.
It can take hours or even days sometimes.
Exactly.
Yeah. The big ones
so
to drain.
You got to really know what you're looking at in a computer and really know what you're doing and ground yourself and stand on a mat and let Dave do it.
I remember my introduction to AC versus DC. I had Legos when I was a kid. I made a helicopter with a little Lego motor, and the rotor didn't spin fast enough to make it fly. So obviously I'm looking at the motor. I want to make it go faster. It said 4 volts on it. Well, I knew there was 120 volts coming out of the wall outlet, so let's hook it up and see.
Holy moly.
No.
So it spun really fast one way, really fast the other way, melted, blew the circuit breaker in the house.
Boy, this is coming to light more and more, explaining.
More and more we understand, Steve.
Electricity and Steve Ray did not go.
Well, it came down from my mother. She got the classic family story. My mom grew up on a farm. And my uncle was too cheap to buy electricity to put on the electric fence, so he just tapped a wire onto the mains and bypassed the whole meter thing.
The meter.
Well, electric mains are what, 40,000 volts, 400,000 volts?
Yeah, 400,000 volts.
My mom got caught on the fence once when she was a little kid, and it threw her off, and she was okay. But then a bull got caught on the fence and killed him. And my grandfather went and beat up his brother-in-law. Take that off the line.
I think it's 440 because they split it, so you have.
Well, it depends on how far down the line you are.
Right. It can get up there. It can get way up.
Yeah.
And that's. I don't do electricity. My father-in-law, God love him, he was when we first bought our house. He came down to take a look at our electrical, and he's fooling around down in the junction box in the basement, and the electricity is on, and he's got his hand stuck in there, and I said, Dad. He said, no, it's perfectly safe as long as I only use my left hand. As long as I only use one hand, it won't arc across my heart. I said, you don't really understand how that works, do you?
Oh, boy.
Not exactly.
Yeah. So you know what I did? I just went upstairs.
Yeah, it's better. Wait for the loud boom.
I went upstairs and unplugged everything in the house. If he shorted out the house, he wasn't going to short out all our appliances while he was at it. And as it turns out, he was fine. But I never asked him again. All right, we're going to take another quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Save us from ourselves. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. The Supreme Court on Wednesday ruled unanimously that the authorities generally may not search the mobile phones of those they arrest unless they have a court warrant. Our answer to the question of what police must do before searching a cell phone seized incident to an arrest is accordingly simple. Get a warrant, Chief Justice John Roberts wrote. It's perhaps the biggest digital age privacy decision that the High Court has rendered following its 2012 ruling that the authorities usually need warrants to affix GPS trackers to a suspect's vehicle. The Obama administration and prosecutors from states across the country had lobbied the High Court in briefs to allow police officers to be able to search arrestees' gadgets, not just mobile phones, without a warrant. The justices declined to do so, saying that privacy comes at a cost. Modern cell phones as a category implicate privacy concerns far beyond those implicated by the search of a cigarette pack, a wallet, or a purse. A conclusion that inspecting the contents of an arrestee's pockets works no substantial additional intrusion on privacy beyond the arrest itself may make sense as applied to physical items, but any extension of that reasoning to digital data has to rest on its own bottom, the court ruled. The court added, prior to the digital age, people did not typically carry a cache of sensitive personal information with them as they went about their day. Now it is the person who is not carrying a cell phone with all that it contains who is the exception. The court suggested that it would not tolerate warrantless mobile phone tracking either. The lower courts are mixed on whether the authorities need a warrant to track a suspect's every move. Although the data stored on a cell phone are distinguished from physical records by quantity alone, certain types of data are also qualitatively different. An internet search and browsing history, for example, can be found on an internet-enabled phone and could reveal an individual's private interests or concerns. Perhaps a search for certain symptoms of a disease, coupled with frequent visits to WebMD. Data on a cell phone can also reveal where a person has been. Historic location information is a standard feature on many smartphones and can reconstruct someone's specific movements down to the minute, not only around town, but also within a particular building. The justices, however, said that waiting for a judge to issue a warrant is not needed in every case if there are exigent or emergency circumstances, such as a bomb threat or child abduction. How do you feel about this decision? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, this was a really big issue in a lot of the ACLU and EFF has been fighting it, that routine traffic stops, police would ask you to turn over your phone and then go through your history and see if you've done anything illegal.
Yep.
And so we're not just going to arrest you for what we caught you doing now. You know, we'll figure out what you did in the past and add that to the list.
Well, that's one thing, though. Also, insurance companies want to know right away. They don't necessarily want to see your phone, but they want to see your phone record as to whether you were on the phone at that particular time texting or talking while this accident occurred.
Right. I still see so many people talking on the phone, and most of them are driving like morons.
Although, to be honest, they probably would drive like that without the phone.
Well, that's absolutely true. I can't disagree with that. But all those of you listening to the show right now, look to your hand. If it's up by your ear and there's a phone in it, you're a moron. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller, who better not be in a car, is our friend Bodan from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bodan. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. No, I'm sitting in my nice little office chair and listening to your fine program. Anyway, my employer made some upgrades within the past couple of weeks to a new and improved computer system, and I had to, on my personal computer, in order to access what they call it, work life, I had to download a program called Junos Pulse, J-U-N-O-S Pulse. Apparently, it's part of hooking up my computer to their network. Are there any negative effects of having this program, Junos Pulse, on my personal computer? One of my coworkers says, "Yeah, but if you hook up to their network, can then they see what you're doing on? They look at your hard drive or anything like that remotely?"
Well, Junos or whatever it is, Pulse.
Yeah.
Looks like it's just a VPN client.
It looks like a VPN client, yeah.
What does that exactly mean?
So,
a virtual private network. Basically what that means is they're creating their own private network tunneled through the real internet. The point behind that is if somebody's trying to catch what you're saying, they can't because, A,
it's not on the public.
It's kind of not on the public network, and even if they could get at it, it's encrypted.
Uh huh.
So it's just like you were in your office. It's a VPN network.
So instead of running a single Ethernet wire from your office to your home, which we used to do, frame relay. This is a virtual private network that runs over top of the public internet. So the public internet can't get in and see your stuff.
Uh-huh.
But the IT people at work may be able to if you happen to have file sharing turned on your computer.
Right. Basically, the basic idea behind VPN is it means that you are on the work network.
Yeah.
Your IP address is a work IP address. And anything that the people at work could normally do on your machine, they can do on your machine.
Well, how do I check to make sure that my file sharing is turned off? Let's say if I'm using a Firefox browser.
No, it's based on what operating system you're running.
Well, actually, I'm still running XP Service Pack 3. That'll soon change by the end of the year, but I'm still running XP 3.
One of the ways to do it is to get NetWatcher on the older computers, which will tell you if you have any shares open. You can share any single folder on your computer by right clicking on it and choosing sharing. So to see if a folder is shared, you can do that, right click and choose sharing. But you have to do that for every single folder.
Oh, wow.
So NetWatcher, I think if you just try to run and do NetWatcher or something like that, it will tell you system-wide all of your shares. Right-click and choose Manage. Right-click on My Computer and choose Manage.
Uh-huh.
And that will bring up the Windows Manager. And then one of those things you can manage is your shares. So
that's what I'm doing right now. Yeah. I just right-clicked on Manage.
Yep.
And then what's the next thing I click on?
In the left-hand column, you want to click on Shares.
Share Storage. I don't see a share. Oh, there it is. Shared Folders. Yeah, click on that.
And if you have anything listed in there, you have a shared folder.
Let's see. Shares.
And then it will also tell you if you have any open files. And it will tell you who is connected to your computer.
Sessions, there are no items to not in sessions. Open files, no items to show in open files.
Okay.
But there is, under shares, it did have share IPC $.
Yeah, that's one of the Windows shares that's automatically shared.
Okay. So that's I can turn that off.
Do you ever want to share files from your computer out to anyone, either on your local network or on your work network?
No.
Then you can go into the network properties and turn off file sharing. Remove the file and printer sharing. Oh, unless you want to share printers.
Right.
File and printer sharing is tied together. So if you're sharing a printer also, that's what the IPC is. It's the internet.
So I might as well just keep it there then.
Yeah.
All right. But the other two ones under sessions, nothing there. There are no items to show in that view. And when I double click on open files, there are no. Yep. So it sounds like they're not trying to tap into me.
Right. So as long as you don't, they might be trying, but they can't.
Yeah, they won't get far.
You don't have any folders being shared, so no one can get into them.
Okay. Well, again, there's always positives and negatives and most things in life. And for me to access my, work employer's computer network, I had to download this UNOS Plus.
Because they don't want you accessing their private resources through the public internet.
Yeah, right. So they're protecting their stuff too then.
Yep.
The other good news is when you stop running UNOS, if you really shut it down, they can't get at you now.
Yeah, now I noticed that also. Now when I did a reboot, it comes up automatically, and it's also one of the items that starts under MS Config. I actually went to turn it off and see if I can control it, but then it caused more problems than I couldn't. It was a bigger hassle, and I had to call the employer's tech support line to get assistance, and they said, keep it running in the background.
It can be running, but you don't have to be connected.
Well, I put my little cursor on it. Right now, Paul says no active connections.
Right. So when you connect, then it's as if you're at work plugged into their network.
Right.
Now, depending on how well-written it is, one of the problems I've always found with a VPN is since you're connected to the work network, if you print something, you can only print to work because your printer is on your home network.
Mm-hmm.
And you are in essence, not on your home network anymore.
Got it. The bottom line,
it's not a bad thing.
Okay, it's not a bad thing. Yeah. So it's not only to protect me, but it also protects the employer's computer network system also, right?
Right.
Right, except all right, gentlemen, they think of it as the other way around.
Yeah.
They're them, and oh, by the way, it protects you.
Yeah, they're protecting themselves from you.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, guys, thanks a lot.
Sure.
Thanks.
And many companies use VPN to let you into their to get into work and see your work computer. Cisco is one of the big VPN vendors. There are some public VPN services that you can subscribe to yourself. So when you're in said coffee shop, you can VPN back to your home computer and be able to then surf fairly securely because you're not on the coffee shop public network. You're on your own private network.
Right. And this is that's a very good thing if you are in a public place. In terms of, we were talking earlier about connecting to open Wi-Fi and blah, 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 blah. If you're specifically doing VPN, you're in good shape. Now, in order to do VPN, of course, you have to have it on both ends.
Right.
So it's not like you could start VPN and then go to Bing. Unless you have a work VPN server, we'll just call it, at the other end to make that VPN connection with, you can't do VPN. So,
and there are free and open source VPN servers, OpenVPN,
right?
But they're a little complicated to set up. So there's a company called ProXPN. They're a big advertiser on the Twit network, and they have Steve Gibson's security seal of approval. And they have a free service that uses OpenVPN to use virtual private networks yourself. You connect to their VPN server. And one of the things you can do is you can connect to other servers around the world. So if you want to watch, say, a TV show that's not available in your city, you just connect to a VPN in some other city, and then you have a private connection. They also have commercial services if you're doing more than that. But, yeah, they do have a free service as well.
And then, of course, you're playing who do you trust.
Right.
Which is always in question.
Well, right. I mean, Steve Gibson gave him them his...
They've done the technology right.
Right, yeah. Which is really all Gibson is saying.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And that's true anyway, The reality is, I can say this now because I don't do it anymore, but, as of tomorrow... I was a system administrator for my entire college. So I could read all the email. I could see all the traffic. I could look at anybody's files. I didn't because I don't care.
Yeah.
Frankly, I don't. My assumption was never somebody somewhere is doing something wrong. So I never, I never did.
You
anything,
have better things to do with your
which
time,
which is probably true.
Well, which is probably true.
With that many students, somebody somewhere is probably.
I'm talking about faculty and staff.
That's right. You were on the faculty side.
Right. I was not doing anybody else, and I always assumed that they were good and honorable people. But I can't vouch for everybody at your ISP.
Yep.
I can't vouch for everybody at your internet provider, no matter where they are. And so we have a certain assumed level of trust every time we connect to the internet at all. And that's just something that we all have to remember. Unless you are running your own router, your own internet service provider, and all your own routers between you and whoever you go to, you're trusting somebody somewhere. We're going to take a break back. We've wasted an entire hour of our day with this nonsense. And then we're going to do it again on the other side. We've got a lot more stuff. The big news all came out of Google this week because of Google I.O. But there's lots of things to talk about, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. This was my favorite thing to come out of Google I.O. last week. Amidst Google's numerous announcements at its I.O. Developers Conference, it was Google's low-budget but practical take on virtual reality that was perhaps the most notable device. Facebook may have dropped $2 billion to buy VR device maker Oculus, but for Google, using cardboard and an Android device is enough. That comparison isn't strictly fair, since Oculus does a lot more than make its Oculus VR product, but in end-user terms, Android Cardboard offers the same opportunity to experience virtual reality, albeit on a budget-driven and simple level. We want everyone to experience virtual reality in a simple, fun, inexpensive way. That's the goal of the Cardboard project, Google says on the Cardboard website, which includes instructions on how to make the product. Those who can't find the components or just can't be bothered can pay $19.95 for an unofficial pre-prepared kit. The Cardboard site has a list of items required, which includes cardboard, lenses, magnets, and a trusty rubber band. This would easily pass for one of Google's many April Fool's Day jokes, but the company is wholly serious. Google has released a VR toolkit to help developers build support for Cardboard into their apps and services. Adoption of new technologies is a key concern for developers. Having shiny new tools to work on is one thing, but they need guarantees that people have the hardware to actually use them. No addressable audience means there's little point. While Oculus sits at one end of the scale with a highly sophisticated product that is currently not on sale to the general public and is generally owned by techies only, Google is taking a radically different approach. Literally anyone has the means to assemble Cardboard, and you'd suspect that pre-prepared packages will be particularly popular at less than $20 a pop. Yeah, I put too many P's in that sentence. It's too early to tell whether Google Cardboard will take off in a meaningful way, but even just the existence of Cardboard is likely to provide a huge boon to the virtual reality industry as a whole. Cardboard might just help some people test the waters or realize VR technology exists outside of sci-fi films. That said, if things really do take off, as Facebook hopes they will, don't expect Google's VR strategy to revolve solely around Cardboard. Something more sophisticated is likely to emerge with time. So would you give VR a shot for $20? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Just like Joe did in Brighton, New York. Welcome, Joe. What's up?
Hi. I'm going nuts here trying to get iTunes, their upgrade on my Win 7 64-bit. What was it, the end of last year or something, I put on an upgrade, but it wiped out everything I had on the older version. And it took, 5 to 15 minutes to load. And after about 3 or 4 deletes, and I've used Revo uninstalled twice, it finally loaded about 3 weeks ago, and the screen is all pixelated and fuzzy. There's the there's no window close X available on it, and it seems to have completely screwed things up. And the only way I can get out of it is to force shutdown by shutting the, you know, pressing the button to shut the whole thing down.
You did. You did select the 64-bit version.
64-bit, yeah.
Because when you go to that screen to download, they've got the 32 there, and you've got to usually click on another.
Sure, the right, yeah, 11.2.2 is the current version.
Yeah, another button to get the 64 version.
Oh well, this I went to
because here's
Apple's own website, and it came up with 64-bit.
It tries to detect which one you need. Yeah, it tries to detect which one you need, and you want to make sure you got the 11.2.2 64-bit.
Oh, it could be that even though it advertised the 64, I might have missed something else.
Yeah, but even running a 32-bit version, won't cause the things you're seeing there. What it sounds like is a bad download and a corrupted install.
And the other issue it could be is iTunes is related and requires other Apple software as well, including QuickTime. And
right,
so it may not be an iTunes problem. It may be a QuickTime problem.
And I'm wondering also, what other spyware or gremlins, have you really done a clean sweep of your machine running the Security Tango?
Not quite. I have Malwarebytes and the Avast and the
it would not be a bad idea.
Yeah, really. Here's the thing. Yeah. Viruses are on the downslide. What's more prevalent out there right now is the spyware, malware, and Trojans. Viruses are very... So you really want to run the super anti-spyware and the malware bytes to make sure you don't have any of that stuff, because that's what could be blocking or interrupting. Because out there, if you're downloading, say, music and that type of stuff, a lot of them have viruses in them or other bugs.
Okay.
And you really want to check for that. Not so much viruses anymore. Yes, you still have to have any virus software on there because, yes, there still are a few out there. But spyware and malware are more prevalent.
And I've posted a link on our website. There are 5 programs related to iTunes, including the iTunes program itself. And Apple gives instructions on how to uninstall all 5 of them and then reinstall them in the right order.
Okay. Well, do I have to use the Revo uninstall for that?
You can try using Apple's own uninstall or the Windows uninstaller. But if you do use Revo, uninstall them in the order that Apple has listed.
I see. Okay. Well, Dee, thank you so much for your help.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the is frustrating things about running Apple software on a non-Apple product is that it does require all these other things you may not have loaded. Those are all auto-loaded on
a Mac.
A Mac, but not necessarily on Windows. And so making sure you get everything loaded and working. And Apple does not do a good job of saying, you know what, you really need X.
Usually when you go to the download site, it will... how does it word it? QuickTime and Windows come in one big installer.
Right, QuickTime and iTunes.
iTunes, yes.
But it's a bundle package.
Else,
yeah.
It should warn you that you should download these. It should also warn you when you try to install them that you don't have these, and do you want to download
yeah.
them?
Yeah, usually the iTunes does. It gives you a little window that opens up, at least on my PC. And it'll say QuickTime, mm-hmm. iTunes, there's updates, and yep. you can select the ones that you want to update.
Yeah, that's the Apple Software Updater, which is yep. one of the five pieces
yep.
that, right. that are all related to it together.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Doug from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Doug. What's up?
I have a brand new laptop running Windows 7 Professional 64-bit, and I was looking at screenshots online of Microsoft Office 2013, and because I'm old, I don't want to relearn new menus, and I have a copy of Office 2000, a legal one and everything. Do you guys know if that is compatible with a 64-bit Windows 7?
Nope.
You don't know, or it isn't.
No. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, I was going to bring you guys beer and donuts, but that's that.
No, what I mean is, nope, it's not compatible.
I wonder.
It may run, but I have talked to more people who have more issues with it. Not day one, not day five, day 10, day 15, day 20, and it's. Permeates your machine. One of the problems, now we'll talk about the other side of this, the Microsoft side. One of the things Microsoft tends to do is when you install something like Office, it often replaces some of the system DLLs with what it likes to think are mm-hmm. updated versions of those DLLs. But when you're on Windows 7 and installing something from 2000... trust me when I tell you those DLLs are not upgrades.
That's why I would highly recommend, since you want something that's compatible, you don't want to learn, do a lot of relearning, go to OpenOffice. It's free, and it'll do everything that Windows will do, and you don't have to learn a lot of new things.
Well, you know what? I've been trying that, but I send out... documents to friends in a band, and a couple of them cannot read doc files from OpenOffice on their phones or tablets.
Are you sending?
But they can read them, you know, if I on their home computer.
Are you sending doc or docx?
Doc.
That's interesting. I would have thought the other way around.
RTF.
Yeah.
There are a couple of things you can do. One is to use RTF, rich text format files, instead. Which are openable automatically by every version of Office I've ever heard of.
And pretty much every program and every other platform,
and Mac, too.
Right.
Yeah.
It is an open standard.
Which is PDFs also, I guess. So.
Well, PDF is not editable
right.
without extra software.
Yeah, they don't need to. They just need to see what I send them. So.
Well, right. then that was the point of PDF, is you get a formatted document that people can read but not edit.
And that's one of the things that you can do in OpenOffice. You can export it, save it as a PDF, and then send that out.
Right, exactly. So I'm just trying to avoid all these extra steps.
You can save the default file format, can't you?
What?
Can you change the default file format so it always does RTF?
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
That would be the way to do it.
Yeah.
That would definitely be the way to do it, is save it everything in RTF, and then your worries go away. You don't have to worry about, oh, this person can't do this, this can't do that. RTF, everybody will be able to read it.
Even if all you have is Notepad Plus or mm-hmm. one of those,
yeah.
it will open in RTF.
Okay. But the nice thing about this OpenOffice, by the way, I found a version that doesn't even need to be installed. I'm running it off a thumb drive. It's great.
Yep. It's an amazing product, both OpenOffice and LibreOffice, which is a fork of the same product.
Gotcha.
Both Alrighty. Excellent products. But if you're looking at, one of the problems is not just a version from 2000, but also a 32-bit version on a 64-bit machine. Sometimes, particularly with older programs, it does not check to see whether you have a 32 or 64-bit OS, and will replace those 64-bit DLLs with 32-bit DLLs. Now you've got problems everywhere. And the only way you fix that, unless you know which DLLs were replaced, is to redo the whole machine.
Now, this is too nice, clean machine here. Yep. Too nice a clean machine. I'm not going to touch that.
Don't mess
that.
Around with it.
Yeah. All righty. I appreciate the tips.
Thanks.
Have a good day.
You too, Doug. Yeah, that's one of the big issues. I don't know if that's an issue on Macs. It's certainly not an issue on Linux because whatever library you're using, it's 64-bit or
yeah, on the Mac
distribution.
It's typically the application is all stored in its own single package, and it doesn't put
right.
those library files anymore.
Right.
Although there is an application support folder that each application can put in there. So I suppose it could be an issue if you're running different versions of the same program.
Right, right. All right, our next caller is Steve from Greece. We got a couple of minutes. Steve, what's up?
Okay, really quickly, OpenOffice and Libre. I heard that the designers for OpenOffice left after it was acquired and moved to Libre, so I would go with Libre.
Yep.
PureVPN, that's what I've been using. I've been using it for a while. Realize you might not know it personally, but I have a couple questions. They want me to set up optimization. Now, two choices are optimum anonymity or maximum anonymity, and I don't know which way to go on that.
Maximum anonymity will be slower.
Okay.
What they're doing is anonymizing every single thing, which means it's going to go through an anonymizing algorithm and maybe an anonymizing server. And that will be slower than optimized anonymity, which is most things are anything with your name, anything that can identify you as anonymized, but just, you know, I want to go to Google and look up the World Cup. They're not going to bother because they've anonymized your IP, but nothing else.
Okay.
And PureVPN is saying they are anonymized or optimized for the World Cup.
Yeah.
So you can watch World Cup games no matter where you are.
And what is split tunneling?
Well, it depends on how they're using it, but basically it means that, remember what I said was a VPN is essentially you create a tunnel through the internet.
Right.
But split tunneling means you can go to two different sources. They may have multiple servers, VPN servers around the world. So they'll send you to the nicest one. I mean, without reading their docs, right. I can't tell you exactly what they mean by that. But
I
that's
think
my guess.
That they refer to it as like you could be inside, you could do your company website and then enter the World Wide Web.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you can go to two different VPN servers.
Just don't use split tunneling at all.
You can if you want to, but
I don't
there's
have
no
any,
real
if I'm
reason.
Just doing it at home or my laptop, I don't need it.
Right.
Okay.
All right, thanks. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, members board, Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we have Bill from Greece, New York on the line. Welcome, Bill. What's up?
Thank you very much. I use Windows 7, and I take a lot of pictures in RAW and JPEG. Is there a way that I can copy just the RAW pictures to put them in one folder and just the JPEG pictures and put them in another folder instead of just clicking on them one at a time?
Yes.
Yeah, just go to that folder, select the first one. We'll sort them by type. And then select, say, the first RAW one, go all the way down to the last RAW one, click on that, and hit the hold down the shift key.
Hold the shift key
down and select the very last RAW one that catches them all, right-click on the whole group, and say cut.
Where do you find select as type?
When you're looking in a window, it almost always... Well, okay, yeah, view details first. So you have to change from icon mode to list view. And it usually sorts it by name. You can click any of the columns, size, date, type, and it will sort it by that type.
Well, when I click, when I click the type, it puts all the JPEGs in a row and then all the RAWs in a row.
That's exactly it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you very much.
There you go.
In fact, a lot of people don't notice that if they click that column, it sorts by that column.
Yeah.
And then I'll sit down at a customer's computer, and it's sorted weirdly, and they can't find their file because they're sorted by, you know, by type instead of by name or by date.
Right.
And if you click it again, so you click it once, it sorts A to Z. You click it again, it sorts Z to A.
Mm-hmm.
And so people will have their list backwards and not know how they accidentally did it.
Right. Lots of little choices in... in something like that. But it's it behooves you to remember them and to learn them. They're little tricks that will help you get a little bit more out of your operating system. That
yeah.
You
a lot of times, if you look really closely at the list, there is a little arrow, a triangle usually, pointing up or down. And that tells you you're sorted by that column, so the column that has the triangle on it, you're sorted
ascending
or descending. Yeah, you can do the same thing in the view menu. There's usually a sort by command, but it's easier just to click on the column.
Few people go past edit.
Yeah, I've noticed that. It's go to yeah. the window menu. Okay, yeah. Where's that? Well, it's between this and that. Where's that?
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. File, edit. View, yeah. Hit whatever history, mm-hmm. whatever the next one is.
Right, and people rarely look past edit. So they know where the file menu is, they know where the edit menu is, but they don't know where the view menu is, they don't know where any of the others are.
And I'll see them jumping up and down a long menu. They look at the few at the top, the few at the bottom, and they skip all the ones in the middle.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, that's the one I'm trying to get them to go to.
Right. it's the fact that we get impatient.
Yeah.
We know what we know, and we really don't want to know anything else. But
they
we
get
have
click
to
happy.
Learn that stuff.
Click happy.
They get click happy. I have God love him. My father-in-law will sometimes do that. I'll tell him, okay, now what you want to do is, and you're three clicks ahead of me already, aren't you?
Yeah.
And two of them are wrong.
You already know that.
Yeah, I already know that. So a lot of people are like that, not just him. I'm picking on him. I love him, but I'm picking on him. But a lot of people will do that. Okay, click on the file menu. Oh, look, there's a... Don't click. Okay, now let's go back.
Go back to the file menu.
Yeah. Go back to the file menu. Now, don't do anything until I tell you.
Too late. He's already clicked.
It's the way it is for people, and I get that. People don't necessarily. There's a pressure to get something done. I want to know how to do. I want to get this done right now. I don't necessarily want to know how to learn how to do it. Mm-hmm. I just want it to happen, mm-hmm. and I get that. I do get that. But it means that you can't do it again next time. If it's just monkey see, monkey do, then it's not monkey learn.
Correct.
And there's always often command key the keyboard equivalent to do the same thing.
Right.
And I still like teaching people the menu way. Because the menus have nice big words on them, and that hopefully that helps you remember. But then in the menu, it will tell you what the command, the keyboard equivalent, we call them command keys on the Apple because we have a can. It's control something on Windows and command something on Mac. And so the keyboard shortcuts can be shortcuts. But you got to learn the commands first to know that there are shortcuts.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let me go to the next news item. You can give us a call, by the way, 966-5299, 800-790-0415. In the meanwhile, I'll read yet another item that came out of Google I.O. this week. Google wants to take some of the stress. Speaking of which, we were just had a call about that. Wants to take some of the stress out of working with Microsoft Office files in the Google Drive application suite. At Tuesday's Google I.O. keynote, the company announced native editing for Office documents right from your mobile device or Google Drive. It's actually pretty simple. Open a Microsoft Word document on your Android device, and you'll be able to edit it and make changes without converting it to a Google Doc first. And when you're done, all changes are saved to that original Word file. There's no need to worry about file conflicts with folks who aren't using Google Apps. Google acquired QuickOffice back in 2012 with plans to bolster the Google Drive suite of editing apps, so it's great to see these vital features finally becoming implemented. Taking another page from the Microsoft Office playbook, Google Docs now offers improved support for tracking changes when you're working collaboratively. Users can now make suggested edits that are highlighted, accepting and rejecting changes at will. If you're working on a document in Google Docs with multiple people before you've likely run into the hassle of trying to figure out who made what changes along the way, unless they commented them. This should make things a bit easier there. The company also announced mobile support for Google Slides, allowing you to create PowerPoint-esque presentations on your Android or iOS device. There's also a bit of news for companies who are considering ditching Microsoft Office for Google Drive. Google Drive for Work is a new premium option that offers file encryption for files transiting to and stored on Google servers and document auditing and activity APIs to keep tabs on how employees are using Drive. Companies will get unlimited storage paying $10 per user per month. There's no word on international pricing yet. Those are U.S. dollars. So does Google Drive sound more enticing now? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. All the companies nowadays are making storage and internet running of your editing of your documents a priority. Microsoft has Office 365, which you can buy for I forget how many dollars a month, and just use Office Online. But if you have Office on your machine as well, they'll interconnect, which is nice. Apple has iCloud, which now has iWork.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Still in beta. They took a page from Google's yep. book. If it's in beta, they can't be
blamed
when something doesn't work.
No harm, no foul.
Yeah. And that works really nicely, except on Chromebooks. I think they do that on purpose. But it works really nicely, and it allows you to do some very, very interesting things.
Well,
I'm actually very impressed by it.
That's why Microsoft should be a little frightened, because there are so many different other alternatives than buying their Office product, which, you know, they keep upping it each year, and it's really not doing that much different. You know, creating a Word document is creating a Word document. Doing a spreadsheet is a spreadsheet. And they haven't changed really that much other than adding HTML code and that type of stuff so you could export it out to the web and yada, yada, yada. But the number of folks that are doing on that, you could count on one hand. The basic stuff for doing word processing and spreadsheets and presentations is still the same as it was 10 years ago.
Well, after 20 years, how do you think up something new to add?
Well, there's the problem Microsoft has always had. Apple makes hardware and an operating system and an ecosystem that works together. They've ported some of that ecosystem, iTunes and that stuff, over to the Windows world.
Yep.
Google search everywhere. And they've got hardware now, and they've got software now, and all of that stuff. But they make 99.999% of their money off of search.
Yeah.
Just like Apple makes 90% of their money off of iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft only ever had an operating system until they came out with Office.
Right.
Then they had Office, which everybody had to have. But now you don't need it on the Mac. You don't need it on Linux. And you really don't need it on Windows either.
Correct.
Because you can get LibreOffice for Windows. You can get, you can't get the iWorks for Windows, right?
In the cloud, you can, yes.
In the cloud, you can.
Yeah.
I'll get to that in a second. But until then, you really had, for a Windows user, two choices. Microsoft Office or OpenOffice, and then LibreOffice. But now, if you want Google Docs, boom, you just do it out of your browser.
Yeah.
You want iWorks, boom, you do it out of your browser. You want Microsoft Office, boom, you do it out of your browser. So you don't need Windows at all.
True.
And that's what scares Microsoft.
True.
They don't have that ecosystem that Google has and that Macs have. They don't have that ecosystem built up yet.
But they're trying.
And they're trying, but they're late to the party.
They're copying Apple Store.
I was going to say, they're a date.
They copied the Apple Store. They copied Google for hardware and everything else. And they're having trouble owning the market. They used to own 99% of the desktop.
They're a day late and dollar short. Yep.
And that's the issue.
And how many partners are they in trouble of alienating by making their own hardware?
And they've been in trouble of alienating for decades, but people didn't have anywhere to go.
And how much is, say, just Microsoft Office?
$200 if you want the full-blown Office, $219.
Which is, it used to be $500, so it's come down.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, yeah, they're being forced to versus, free.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the updates are more prevalent.
Right, you still have to pay a monthly... You can pay a monthly fee to get all that, and
that's their latest big change is that you can buy a subscription. It's $100 a year for five users, which is pretty cheap per user.
Right.
And if you've got a computer, a phone, and a tablet, that's three users.
Yes, it is.
So in your family, you might need a couple of these subscriptions.
Mm-hmm.
But you still can buy the standalone, what we're calling a perpetual license. You pay once and that's it.
But it's only perpetual till the next version comes out.
Right. And you don't get the new version. That's with their Office 365 subscription. You always get the new version every time it comes out.
Right. So it's not a bad deal. I'm not saying it's a bad deal.
Yeah, but no compelling reason, though, to not do like Libre or OpenOffice, though.
Right. The big reason not to do LibreOffice is people don't want... Well, we had somebody who actually said that. Don't want to learn new menus.
Hmm. Yep.
And I get that. You've gotten comfortable with what you've got. If you had to buy, if you bought a car and all the controls were on the right now, you'd have trouble driving for a while.
Well, it's just like Windows 8 versus Windows 7.
Exactly.
I mean, it's such a big shift that, you know, Microsoft right now, I think the beta code is supposed to come out in August for Windows 9.
Yep.
And from what I understand, it's supposed to go back to the original. I don't know whether they were listening to us or not, but I also heard rumors that they were going to give you the option whether to do a tablet mode or the old Windows look.
Yeah, the start button will be back.
Yep.
And you can have that if you want it or not. And that's basically the compromise they've made. It really is an issue in terms of coercion. You know?
Mm-hmm.
At least twice that I can think of, Apple has said... Everything you know and everything you have is now completely obsolete, and we're going to do it all over again.
Yep.
But Apple had Steve Jobs to stand up and make it okay.
Yes. And people followed him. Like a god.
There's a lot in that.
Yep.
Oh, yes.
There's a lot in that. We love all our old users, but you're all screwed now. We're going to do this instead.
And you never saw Gates or any of the others saying, you know.
No, they don't. Well, they weren't Steve Jobs.
And that's been a problem in the Windows world is Windows is hampered by backward compatibility. That they've got all of these corporations using all this ancient software. In fact, they're still doing it now. This ancient software running on XP,
mm-hmm.
and no one is buying Windows 8.
And
because it won't run their stuff.
When Apple tried to do what Jobs did twice, or when Microsoft tried to do what Jobs did twice, by bringing out Windows 8 and saying everything you know is wrong, people said...
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, we just won't buy it.
We just won't buy it, and they aren't buying it.
And computer sales have slumped, because most new computers are coming with Windows 8. Every now and then, you can find... In fact, I just got an ad from HP. Look at our brand new computers that still have Windows 7 on it. Please buy them.
Yeah.
And now the world is changing. As I read earlier, the top 10 laptops on Amazon are Chromebooks.
The least expensive laptops, which is the other key driving factor.
They're the least expensive, and they don't get viruses, and updating them is one click.
Yep.
Boom, one click. You wait a couple of minutes. I'm sorry, I did not hear the music. You make one click. You wait a couple of minutes, depending on how fast your connection is, to download it. You reboot. You're done. And nothing changes on the screen. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Munich Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on the solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have another Supreme Court decision to talk about today. There's a company called Aero, which was A-E-R-E-O, which was offering over-the-air television streams. The Supreme Court has determined that that is illegal. Basically, the way it happened was broadcasters would send free TV signals over the public airwaves, which is, of course, what they do.
You have an antenna in your house.
And you have an antenna in your house to receive it. And what Arrow was doing is they were using capturing the signal, which was sent, you know, in whatever region. So they had multiple antennas in multiple regions. And then they would broadcast those signals onto the internet, which would be sent to customers over the web for viewing. And then you would watch broadcast shows on web-enabled TVs and mobile devices from your home. And what the Supreme Court said is that they do not see how the fact that Arrow transmits via personal copies of programs could make a difference. They concluded that Arrow is not just an equipment supplier, that they are also supplying the content. Arrow basically argued that they were simply forwarding the content,
right?
Because creating the content,
you had to put an antenna in your house,
right? They were a carrier like the phone company. If I call you and breathe heavily over the line, you can have me arrested or sue me or whatever you want to do, but you can't sue the phone company because they're only a carrier.
And the sort of irony here is that if you buy an antenna for your TV to get free broadcast, you know, high def TV shows, what makes that different than Arrow buying the antenna?
Well, because the Arrow is buying an antenna not in your region.
Well, you buy an antenna in your region, but because it's on the internet, you can watch things in other regions too.
Right, that's
enough of a difference, apparently.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
Although Slingbox has been doing that for a decade now.
But it's coming from your house. You recorded in your house,
you
and
as
it comes.
An individual. Yeah. You're not. It's not a money making profit. It's not a commercial venture. And Arrow says they're done. One of the major investors has said we did try, but it's over now. And so that's the end of it. Arrow has very little chance of surviving.
So that's a real big blow to cord cutters who don't want to have cable TV cords and want to watch their stuff anywhere they are.
Right. Basically, you can't use technological tricks to bypass cable network rules and regulations.
I'm at a friend's house and I want to watch the show I DVR'd last night. I can't. I have to hope he DVR'd it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And you theoretically can't have more than, what is it, 10 people?
Yeah, more than 10 people in a room, or it constitutes a public performance, which is illegal. If you ever watched, if anyone has actually ever read those disclaimers before a movie, where it says a public performance is prohibited, they had never defined what public performance meant until recently, and more than 10 is a public performance.
Right.
So if you have a big family, you're public.
That's exactly right. My aunt had 10 kids, so with the two of them, that's 12 people.
Yep.
If they all watched the same show, that was illegal. So if you've got a half a dozen kids over for a pajama party, as my daughter did many times, possibly too many to count, and you show them a movie that you've DVR'd or that you have on DVD or that's coming live over a television set, that's fine, as long as there are fewer than 10 humans in the room.
Disney has been notorious for suing daycare centers who put on Disney movies because that's a public performance and a violation of the license.
And
you can buy a license if you go to the MPAA or the individual publisher. You can buy a performing license, but it's hideously expensive.
Yeah, I was going to say, and how many folks
are
going to get busted on that?
They also sue companies that daycare centers that paint Disney characters on the walls.
Yep.
And they know that they're in a catch-22. If they do that, they're the bad guys, and nobody wants Disney.
They sued
a
nursery home.
Yeah, I know. It's a little daycare center in some woman's home. She painted Donald Duck on the wall.
To make the kids settle down because they make them happy.
Right. But the problem is they know that if they do not aggressively follow their copyright, force their copyright, they lose it, like Kleenex did, like Refrigerator did, like 100 different companies did. Well, no, Kleenex is not one of them. Kleenex actually
fought back.
Constantly reminds people it's Kleenex.
Facial tissue. Is, yeah,
right.
Yep.
You can call it facial tissue, which people do now.
Yep.
But they were in. They were
Johnson
&
Johnson Band-Aid brand.
Right. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of them that were lost over the years. And a bunch of others that, and so now everybody's really aggressive.
I remember an article in
defending their copyright.
A letter to the editor in one of the magazines. There was an article about using styrofoam to pack your computer. Styrofoam is a registered trademark of a certain type of polystyrene plastic. So you have to put your little registration copyright symbol on that if you ever put it in writing. So it's very frustrating for the company. If you create a great product with a cool name, you don't want your product to be. You almost do want your product to be the generic name, but you want to make sure they know it's your product.
Right.
So you go to the store and buy Band-Aids. You don't realize that's a Johnson & Johnson brand name.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and so there have been a bunch that have been lost over the generations, and so they don't want to be one of them.
Going back to the TV antennas. And that stuff. There was one infomercial that came out and said, you can get this to get high def. You put it on your wall or in a window and hook it up, and you get all these great channels free. Of course, the cable signal people don't want you to know about this and this and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, most of that
and
you is get eyewash. It,
and it's like, it's not dependent on the cable, folks. It's dependent upon the signal in your area. And if you don't have a good signal to pick up those other stations that are in high def that are free, you're not going to get it.
Right.
So a lot of folks get it because there's not a lot of them out there that you're going to get what they claim that you're going to get.
Right. And also, it also depends on where you put it. If you stick it in a window on the first floor, the chances are likely that you're not going to get a very good signal no matter how wonderful that antenna is. That's why antennas were in the attics and on the roofs. Ours was in the attic. It was inside in the attic. But, of course, it was a home with wood walls and wood ceiling and joists and everything. So
could pick up the signal.
It could still pick up the signal. And I can't tell you how many times we did a little... my mother would be standing near the television. I'd be standing halfway up the stairs. My father would be in the attic and a little bucket brigade of voices. A little more! Too far! Too far!
Ram it!
Okay. Mom says not so much.
Oops.
Yeah. Those were the days.
Oh. Well,
then we had rabbit ears on the television. None of you people even know. Shut up, you puppies. Nobody even knows what we're talking about.
I can remember when remote was me as a kid getting up and turning the channel for Dad.
Yes, that's right.
Yep.
There was no click, click. It was you. Hey, get up and change the channel.
At least there were only four channels.
Yeah.
Four? I remember when the third one came to town.
And I remember waking up in the morning sometimes and TV hadn't turned on. The test pattern was still there.
I love the test pattern. We used to watch the test pattern because the test pattern meant Captain Kangaroo was next.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. There was some little news and stuff.
Oh, yeah. But
Farm Report.
Not much.
Captain Kangaroo was next.
Mm-hmm. And you just sat there waiting for that test pattern. All of a sudden to go off and then all of a sudden start hearing actual noise. Yes, it's coming on. Woohoo.
Yeah.
Oh, geez, Louise. No.
Those were the days, my friend.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Now it's Showtime is free this weekend, by the way. Those of you who have Time Warner Cable. Showtime is doing a free weekend, luckily including on demand. So you can binge watch Penny Dreadful, at least the first six out of eight episodes.
I've heard
so
it is pretty dreadful.
You can, well, it's got great people in it.
Yeah.
It had David Warner. It's got Josh Hartnell. It's got Timothy Dalton, Eva Green, Billy Piper. It's got an amazing cast in it. And most of them are pretty good.
One other thing I should put a plug out. Today is the last day of the Jazz Fest.
Yes.
So if you haven't been down there, please come on down. We've got a tent down there. You know, stop by, say hello. We'd love to see you folks. It's been an amazing crowd down there all week. And for the folks that sit there and say, I don't really like jazz. Hello, Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yeah.
You know, from Foreigner.
All types of jazz. Lou Graham.
Lou Graham was up there. I mean, Thursday night, Soul Stew, I got to introduce them. There is a lot of great music still going on today. It's your last day. It's a beautiful day. Get out. Come on down. Say hello and enjoy some great music at the Jazz Festival.
Jazz is a word like computers. It encompasses an amazing range of stuff. So I'll almost guarantee you're going to find something you'll like. All right, folks, that's it. Another week has gone by. We want to thank each and every one of you called in. We want to apologize to those to whom we did not have time to get. You really have to call earlier and more often. We're going to be gone for a whole week, but we'll be back next Saturday. In the meantime, do not change this channel because George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of this nonsense on the longest running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great, and I mean it when I say this, solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week.